The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Australia may soon be welcoming a lot of new neighbors, the white South African farmers. Oh my gosh, of course they're welcoming the white people. The African National Congress Party in South Africa has now proposed a constitutional amendment to take white-owned farms and to redistribute the wealth to the black citizens without any compensation to the landowners. Potentially thousands of white South Africans can find themselves now looking for new homes, new land, and new jobs. Peter Dutton oversees the immigrationists. Australia's Home Affairs Minister. He says Australia should grant emergency visas to white farmers from South Africa that would allow them to resettle in Australia on humanitarian grounds. He says we should do this as a civilized country, and he took heat in Australia and South Africa for saying that the farmers needed protection in a civilized country.
Oh my gosh, civilized country. What is he saying?
A spokesman for South Africa's foreign ministry called Dutton's remarks regrettable, adding there is no reason for any government anywhere in the world to suspect that any South African is in danger from their own democratically elected government. That threat just doesn't exist. Really? Because usually whenever this has happened before, the threat does exist. Wouldn't we be saying exactly the opposite if it was white people taking the land from black people? Wouldn't we be saying the opposite? Whenever a government denies something like this, that usually means, yes, the threat is there. As in many parts of the world, immigration is a hot-button topic in Australia. Thousands of immigrants, mostly Muslims from the Middle East and Southeast Asia, are being held offshore in detention facilities because of an Australian policy that denies asylum seekers who reach Australia by boat. And people think that we are. So, oh my gosh, look how bad the United States is. Every other country just lets people pour in. Apparently not. Dutton is accused of using race as a political tool because he supports the offshore detention facilities and because he also blamed the rising crime in Melbourne on African immigrant gangs. Well, are there African immigrant gangs that have been doing things? Because if there are, I think we could just... isn't this a math problem? Not a race problem? In an interview with the Sydney Daily Telegraph, Dutton said, "We want our people who come here, listen to this, we want people who will come here to abide by our laws, integrate into our society, work hard, and not lead a life on welfare," end quote. Sounds kind of like what everybody wants, isn't it? South Africa seems determined to try to correct decades of injustice with more injustice and create a new homeless class of white farmers. So what's wrong with Australia rolling out the welcome mat for those outcasts? Well, apparently plenty. Plenty. For all of the world's progress, it never ceases to amaze how much we are still hung up on race.
It's Friday, March 16th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
And it really is. That's the crazy thing. It really is Friday, March 16th, and this is the Glenn Beck Program. And welcome to our executive producer, Mr. Stu Bergier. Hello, Stu.
Hello, Glenn. How are you?
Oh, my. Oh, my. I'm good.
Things are good.
Oh, my gosh. They're good.
Going well.
Yes. Unless you're somebody who happened to be at a stoplight underneath a bridge in Florida yesterday, or you happen to be the people who released this press release. This method of construction reduces potential risks to workers, commuters, and pedestrians, and minimizes traffic interruptions. The main span of the Sweetwater University City Bridge was installed in just a few hours with limited disruption to traffic over the weekend. The Sweetwater University City Bridge is the largest pedestrian bridge, moved via self-propelled modular transportation in U.S. history. It is also the first in the world to be constructed entirely of self-cleaning concrete. When exposed to sunlight, the titanium dioxide in the concrete captures the pollutants and turns it bright white, reducing maintenance costs. Funding for the $14.2 million bridge connecting plazas and walkways is part of a $19.4 million transportation investment generating economic recovery, a Tiger Grant, from the U.S. Department of Transportation. Now, can I ask you a question? We've just spent $14.2 million of my money and your money on a bridge, a pedestrian bridge, in Florida. All this brand new technology, and it's gonna be great. And it was for five whole days. What happened? Who's going to be held responsible? And what do we learn from this?
Well, what the left learned was that Donald Trump, who does not care about our infrastructure, has abandoned it and will not. Because all these tax cuts.
Yeah, well, it's crumbling infrastructure.
Crumbling infrastructure.
This was five whole days old.
Right. Of course, they didn't realize that it had just been installed 5 days ago and was an example of us spending millions of dollars on infrastructure.
No, let's
and the latest technology.
Let's just be specific. $19.4 million federal taxpayer money went down to Sweetwater. 14.2 went to build this bridge.
And this is separate from the tragedy, which is obviously really bad. Six people died, and it could be worse. It's a really bad event. Separate from that, how can we say that we don't have enough money for our infrastructure when we're spending $19 million on a pedestrian bridge?
Thank you. Thank you for saying that. How is it we're talking about crumbling infrastructure and we're spending $14 million to build a high-tech pedestrian bridge that I want to quote the press release. Construction of the bridge began in 2017, expected to be completed early 2019. When finished, the bridge will be 298 feet long, 109 feet tall, and the 32-foot wide bridge will serve as a study and gathering place. That doesn't seem like critical infrastructure. Is that critical infrastructure that we have another study and gathering place?
It made it easier for the university, students to get to the town instead of having to deal with the streets, which, again, it's not that it's an invalid project. There's no reason for the United States federal government to be funding a project like that. If you want that project, Florida, pay for it yourself, period. There's no reason. This is constant. And they act as if we need another $1 trillion on infrastructure. This does not prove this. It's the opposite. And, you look at this, Florida International is like the head of this type of construction. It's called accelerated bridge construction. Mm-hmm. And it's a new method where they basically build the bridge on the side of the road instead of, interrupting traffic the whole time and then put it on wheels and wheel the thing into place. I mean, it's an amazing
thing. It's a great idea.
And it's a great thing and probably will be eventually a way that we do these things more efficiently. Obviously, this big first test of it did not go well.
Yeah, however. So we shouldn't be testing things over roads. I mean, that's to me.
Well,
we shouldn't be testing things. No,
it has to go over a road.
You said the first big test.
Well,
there should be lots of tests of this.
I'm sorry, it's not like they just came up with the idea last week. Like, I don't know, let's wheel it over the street.
Well, they obviously didn't test it enough. I mean, I know people who are literally dying of cancer. And if it causes any kind of problems, no, we can't do that. You might have the heartbreak of
psoriasis.
Psoriasis. Mm-hmm. You might have that just horrible heartbreak as you're dying with cancer. We can't do that. We don't know if it's safe. What was the testing of this like?
I mean,
five days.
It's apparently I mean, they've been testing it for years.
No, I know that, but it lasted 5 days.
Yeah, I guess what they, you know, from what I've read about it, and I cannot say that I walk into today as an expert on accelerated bridge construction.
Yes, I
but
agree.
I think, you know, as everyone does, when something like this happens, everyone becomes a 24-hour expert on accelerated bridge construction. And it does seem like, you know, it takes a lot of precision. And if one little thing goes wrong in that process, you can have a situation like this. Obviously, they didn't think they were going to get anything wrong. And this company that is... you know, responsible for the building and the, you know, checking, making sure all the monitoring was going correctly. Very politically connected in Florida. So now,
Wait, what?
This is not a pretty story. I will say that. But again, it has nothing to do. All the people that you're going to see on your social media feeds today that tell you this is a this is proof that Donald Trump didn't do his job with infrastructure. It's ridiculous. This, and beyond that, he's the guy who wants to spend all the money on infrastructure.
That's right. It wasn't critical infrastructure. It was a brand new bridge. What do you say? If we're, you'll never say it. You people will, you political driven people on the left in this particular case, We'll make this all about our crumbling infrastructure. We've got to spend more money. Donald Trump wants to spend twice as much as Obama did. You will never talk about how this is not critical infrastructure. This was a gift to a university. When are the universities going to start paying their own way? When are the universities going to start giving back? You want to talk about universities? We lived in New Haven, Connecticut. The infrastructure of New Haven is crumbling while Yale just keeps pouring money in. When are these guys going to pay taxes? Oh, no. Churches should pay taxes, but not universities with their billions of dollars. This wasn't critical infrastructure. You can complain to me about critical infrastructure crumbling, which it is in some areas. You can do that when it is critical infrastructure and it was crumbling because it was there longer than 5 days. It may be one of those days today because... Next, I want to tell you about the first illegal immigrant appointed to state office in California. We'll do that in a second. Can you imagine taking a car on a 100-day test drive or getting a pair of shoes and being able to walk around for 100 days, see if they really are comfortable? Well, that is exactly what Casper Mattress wants to do. Sleep on their mattress for 100 nights. It's the 100-night sleep challenge. You'll do it and you will know, is this the right mattress for me? It is for me and my wife. We sleep on it every night and we love it. It's Casper Mattress. Unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and alignment so you feel perfectly balanced and comfortable. And it ships free right to your door in a little teeny box. And if you don't love it, all you have to do is just call them and they come and pick it up. So, and refund every single penny. So there's nothing to worry about. No questions asked. They just want you to try it. And if you don't love it, then you can find another mattress, but the next time you try a mattress, you're going to be in the same problem. You're going to be just laying in a store this time and only having about 20 minutes to roll around in it to see if you like it. 100 nights. Try it for 100 nights in your own home. I think you're going to love it. It's Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. You'll save $50 on select mattresses. It's promo code Beck at Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Hello. Welcome. I'm glad you're here. Let me go to Patrick in Colorado. Hello, Patrick. You're on the Glenn Beck program.
Hey, Glenn.
Hi.
Long-time listener, big fan.
Thank you.
And if I could quickly say, we need more stew.
Thank you. That's what America is demanding, and finally someone's articulated
it. The kind that you get out of a can. But anyway, go ahead.
Good point.
So I just wanted to go over the idea of inspections and county and state inspectors. I've been in the construction industry most of my life, and we're often taught that the inspector is there to make things safe. But the fact of the matter is, the big joke in construction is that if you wash out in the industry, become an inspector.
Yeah, well, wow. I think that is the joke in every industry.
So furthermore, you know, just a quick instance, I built my own house about 2 years ago, you know, and I had to pay an engineer to design the concrete foundation, and the planning department had to approve it, and then the building department had to approve it. And the engineer missed a really big part of the job, and it was me and the other contractor that I hired to do the concrete that actually caught it. And the two of us are standing there scratching our heads, looking at each other, thinking, I paid thousands of dollars to this engineer, and then the planning department and the building department both had to approve everything and stamp off on it. And if we built it the way that they designed it, we would have had some problems on the house. Now, we fixed it. But the idea that you have safety or security because the county or state government is involved, I mean, I think most of your audience knows that that's kind of laughable.
Yeah. So wait a minute. So hang on just a second. So did you have to go back when you caught it? Did you have to go back and have the plans reapproved, or did you just do it?
Oh, we just fixed it. I mean, it took us 2 hours and a shovel and some rebar to fix it. But you know, they would want us to do that, but we skip it all the time. Let me give you another for instance. I don't want to take up too much time. We get given the ideas by magazines all the time. People are like, oh, I want it to look like this. And we say, that's great. We can make it look like that, but it's illegal. So they say, well, what do we do? Well, it's easy. So we go through and we install a standard handrail that looks normal and passes inspection.
Mm-hmm.
And the inspector walks out the door. We rip it out. And then we put in the nice metal one that looks like branches and leaves. That's all artsy and cute. And
Oh, my gosh. The inspector's got him. Okay, he's back. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and the fact is, they don't care. They have to sign off that, yes, when we showed up, it was the way we wanted, but you can change it however you want the next day. They don't have the time or the resources or
this is the problem. This is the problem. This is why gun control and drug wars and everything else don't work. Because if the people want to do it, they will find a way to get it done. And the inspection process is usually just a joke. It is.
It was just.
I mean, I've had great inspectors on projects that we have done, and the city has come in and looked at things. I've also had pain in the ass. Don't have any idea. They just are. They're either marking time, or you know, it's like the parking lot cop that is in a rented outfit that thinks he's got all of the power in the world and wants to let you know, I have all the power in the world.
Well, and Glenn, it even gets worse than that, because right now in Mesa County, like, we had a bad year or two as far as enough money for the county. So what did they do? They got rid of a couple inspectors. So now the guys that they have left have to do more inspections even more quickly.
Yeah.
And these guys, and I'm not even kidding you, I've been on job sites, and this is when I was younger, before I was running any kind of job site. I've seen inspectors not get out of their truck. They drive up, a six-pack of beer is walked out to the guy, and they sign off on the thing without even getting out of their truck and looking at it. And that stuff still happens, and I hate to say it, but it happens because that's the way that we can make the process quick and painless for our customer and ourselves.
So let's keep our mouth shut on that. I don't know how many beers, however, I don't know how many beers were walked over for the bridge, you know. But when it comes to something like that, when it comes to a serious issue, we need the inspectors, and they need to be clean, and they need to do their job.
By the way, for a six pack of beer, I can get any of your calls on the air. Just set it up with me. This reminds me, though,
for a bottle of Jack Daniels, I'll give you the show.
This reminds me of last summer in Toronto, and this is a Canadian story, but it applies, I think, here, which is they were going to make a new set of stairs to go down a decline for $65,000 to $150,000 was
the
cost.
Yeah.
And just a guy in the neighborhood got sick of it and decided he just walked up there one day, just started building stairs, built a nice set of stairs for $550.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened? The next day, they came in and with power tools and tore the stairs down.
Tore the stairs out. We cannot allow just the average citizen to build stairs. Why? He just saved you $100,000.
Check them out. You know, yeah. If you think they're...
Measure them and go, yeah. Huh?
I mean, but I mean, why not take the extra $150,000 of savings
and go buy yourself all the beer you want? There as you far go. As I'm concerned, just leave us alone.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
A Rockland High School teacher, this is in Rockland, California, has been placed on administrative leave due to several complaints from parents and students involving the teacher's communications regarding the student-led civic engagement activities. Now, here's what happened. In California, you know, you can do whatever you want. Illegal aliens smoking pot while having sex with underage children, as long as they're wearing a t-shirt that says Gavin Newsom for governor, you're okay.
That's a law. That's actually the way it's written too.
Some would have said that was extremist, but no, that's the actual law. But however, if you disagree that somebody should be allowed to march out of class against the Second Amendment, you don't have a right to a First Amendment for that opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So here's what the teacher said. Look, I just want to know if we are doing these things. She set out a memo and she said, it's an example of consistency. Quote, if a group of students nationwide or even locally decided I want to walk out of school for 17 minutes and go into the quad area to protest abortion, would that be allowed by our administration?
And you shall not question.
And she's been put on administrative leave because she can't ask that question.
That's amazing. I mean, because I could tell you this. There's a scientific consensus here. If all gun violence continues you're still going to wind up with a lot more people alive if you got rid of the abortion the other way. A lot more abortions.
Yeah, you hand everybody in America a gun, there still will be more abortions. More people killed by abortions.
Yeah. If you get rid of abortion, you're going to have a lot more people alive than if you get rid of gun violence.
So, and she wasn't advocating for pro-life. She's just saying, I'm wondering if this is equal. Both of them are about constitutional rights.
How do you test a statement, right? You bring up the opposite side. You bring up, and it may be sometimes even an extreme.
You will not question us. You will not say the other. There is no other side. Fräulein. No other side.
It's true. That is really the that's what they want, is there is no way to test it. Because if you test it, then you find the logic of their statement to be incorrect.
There is, I'm telling you, there is a movement. There's an underground movement. And there's a possibility that it actually stems from the belly of the beast, that it actually comes out of California. And on the Pacific side, you know, I'm thinking of the... what's the evolutionist guy that we've been talking about? Weinstein, a biological evolutionist from Evergreen University, which is really makes Berkeley look like Beck University. He's I can't work there anymore. My wife and I, both evolutionary biologists, scientists, cannot work there anymore because they've just unpegged for science and any kind of reason doesn't exist anymore. She's using reason. This is something that has been lost. She's using reason, which is what we're supposed to be teaching our children. Let me engage in reason here. You're protesting a constitutional right. Abortion is said to be a constitutional right. Some people disagree with the constitutional right to bear arms. Some people disagree that it's a constitutional right to kill children. If you can protest your constitutional right, do I have the right to protest this constitutional right? The answer is clearly no. Not only do the kids not have the right to protest and walk out of class for 17 minutes and be called heroes and brave, they also don't have the right as a teacher or anyone else to even ask that question. This is a concentration camp mentality. California, let me ask you a question. How do you grow from this? What are you going to do when you have all of your beloved people running the state and you have half or a third of your population that doesn't agree with the way you want to run the state? Do you put them in re-education camps? No, the idea, I think, is you're just hoping everybody will move out so you can have your socialist utopia. Well, that's wrong. That's wrong.
Yeah, we were talking off the air the other day about a book called Science Left Behind. And it's about Hank Campbell and Alex Barazow. And they go over a ton of examples of how largely the book focuses on examples on the left, because everyone says it's the, you know, conservatives who abandon science. And they go through example after example after example after example of how the left does exactly this. They will take science and they will just disregard it when it butts up against whatever theory of the day they're trying to promote. And, you know, you can't successfully run a society that way. You have to be able to look at the facts and objectively analyze them. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't mean you're going to get everything right, but if you can at least take the time to honestly question. There was somebody a long time ago who had something about honestly questioning things that
I don't know.
He was a guy who kind of had a good idea about how to run things.
So here's this. Wednesday, first illegal immigrant ever to serve in state office in California was appointed by the California Senate Rules Committee. Elizabeth Mateo, 33, who attended Santa Clara University Law School in 2016, passed the California bar last year, is going to serve as the California Student Opportunity and Access Program Grant Advisory Committee, which advises the California Student Aid Commission on ways to make it easier for students from low-income or underserved communities to attend. What are those underserved communities?
I have a guess.
Yes, I bet you do. Senate President Kevin DeLeon, who announced the decision, took the opportunity to slam President Trump. He released a statement in which read, "While Donald Trump fixates on walls, California will continue to concentrate on opportunities." Ms. Mateo is a courageous. How dare him use Ms.? Is that the proper pronoun? I hope to God so.
Is that an assumption of gender?
I think it is. Oh, Ms. Mateo is courageous, determined, and an intelligent young woman who at great personal risk has dedicated herself to fight for those seeking their rightful place in this country. Now, Mateo followed that up with, while undocumented students, in my day we used to call them illegally here, illegal aliens. While undocumented students have become more visible in our state, they remain unrepresented in places where decisions that affect them are made. So in other words, in the House and the Senate, you can't legally vote, but now you can serve in the Senate.
If you're Donald Trump,
yes.
Let's run this by you here.
Yes,
you're okay. Sitting in the White House.
I'm Donald Trump.
You're Donald Trump. You're
okay.
Sitting in the White House.
Got
right
it.
Now. Okay. You are a guy who occasionally likes the jousting of a good conflict.
Yes, I okay? like conflict.
You
like, I'm Donald Trump.
You
I like conflict.
It. It's
yes.
kind of like what you like
yes.
about the gig,
that's right?
That's right.
It's like that's what life is all about.
And you like to send the message
yes.
that you're very tough.
He likes that too.
On illegal immigration.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to be tempted.
Mm-hmm.
mid-speech to send a crew in there from ICE and to remove her from this country in the middle of a sentence.
So, in other words, Ms. Mateo, assuming that is her proper pronoun,
right?
she is giving a speech, and all of a sudden, the doors are kicked in on each side, and ICE grapples down from the ceiling.
I think you walk into the front door. It's
and flies her to Mexico.
There's no reason to damage a door in this process.
I think Donald Trump might say, you know what, kick the door down, even if it's open. Lock it and then kick it down.
Because, look, it's one thing.
Yeah,
we've talked about like the Dreamers. We've talked about all these groups with all these wonderful names, all these wonderful people from other countries who just couldn't make it in their own and have made it there. No issue of their own, no fault of their own. They're just here. Hey, look, that is one thing. And obviously, Donald Trump has supported DACA. He's a guy who's been he's had some sympathies for those arguments. Right. When you are flaunting it so badly that you have broken the law, that you're doing something illegal, that you would enter the first ever state representative or whatever it is to go into an actual state government role and then have it publicized in multiple news stories and tell everyone on earth where you're going to be every minute of the day.
Right.
That is really a finger in the face of the president, of the border guard.
Of the United States.
Of the United States of America. United
and
States
our legal system. Yeah. Okay. So just one more thing. Just to, you know, to point out that, you know, not only is she here illegally and she's now serving as an illegal, you know, in state government, she is she's also the one who played a key role in helping a group of people known as the Dream Nine. You know the Dream Nine?
I don't know the Dream Nine. I know Ocean's 8. I don't know the Dream Nine.
Dream Nine. I didn't watch 1 through 8, so I don't know if I truly understand Dream Nine. But the Dream Nine were 9 people that were returned to the U.S. after being deported to Mexico. So the ICE came in, deported them, and she helped them come back into the country.
Wait, how do you...
I don't know if it happened in the middle of the night. I don't know how it happened. But I think I'm more and more inclined to enjoy someone grappling down during the middle of her speech. You want to find a great employee. You want to find the one that is going to change your business for the better. You have to have the best way to find them. Better than posting your job online and praying that the right person... Well, we all know that thoughts and prayers don't matter, right? ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right job candidate for you. ZipRecruiter, they learn what you're looking for, and then they go out and they identify the people with the right experience and then invite them to apply for your job. The invitations have revolutionized the way this, job searches are working. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter.com/Beck get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications that you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidate is there. And ZipRecruiter.com/Beck will help you find them. Try it yourself for free. Post your job online and see the results for yourself. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Try it now. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
All right, California, I don't want you to feel like all hope is lost, even though it is. Did I say that out loud? I want to tell you how bad things are in France. There is a there's a French rule that you've got to be closed. If you're a business, at least a bakery, you have to be closed one day out of the week because you have to have a day of rest. Not because God told you to do that, because that's silly and really, really bad. This because the government says you have to have a day of rest. Well, there's this this baker in a town of about 2,000. It's a resort town. He wants to make ends meet by being open on Sundays because the tourists are there and he can make a lot of money during tourist season. He just, quote, likes to work. The government has fined him and told him he has to close his bakery. Out of a town of 2,000, He's already gotten the 2,000 residents to sign his petition to leave the bakery alone. He said, quote, "We just have to stop ticking people off who like to work."
Wow.
I love that because it used to be that they were closed one day a week for like the blue laws, right?
Yes.
Oh, Alexa's talking over there.
Alexa, shut up.
Go ahead. But it used to be closed because of religious reasons different parts of the world.
That was crazy.
Then the government overturned those laws,
mm-hmm.
and now they're implementing them again, just right. with no religious connotation.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay,
but for the same reason, mm-hmm. you have to rest.
Oh, okay. Yeah, of course. I'm a little concerned about, now tomorrow is St. Patrick's Day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you'll be celebrating.
No, I don't like the saints. I don't like the people named Patrick, and it all comes from religion. I think it's oppressive.
In Savannah, there's a Me Too movement going on, I think. This is how I'm seeing it. Apparently, women in the crowd are known to dash out in the streets in the middle of their parade and plant a smooch.
No.
On uniformed service members
no.
marching in the St. Patrick's Day
no.
parade.
No.
It is the second largest parade for St. Patrick's Day in the United States, third largest in the world. And over, it started in the 1960s, mm-hmm. and it has gotten out of hand over time.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Larson's a spokesman for nearby Fort Stewart, said that the military is just asking people to police themselves. It's not a law or a rule. They, of course, it causes delays in the parade and there's all sorts of other issues. However, these poor servicemen might not want these kisses.
Amen.
Now, the officials
that doesn't explain the T-shirt that they all wear that says Me Too question mark.
Apparently
Me
not.
Me Too?
Right.
Me Too?
Listen to this. They have suggested that soldiers who do not want to be kissed can say no or offer a handshake instead. However... Oh. This is a quote from the article. Quote, "Bystanders can't be forced to stop." What the hell do you mean they can't be forced to stop? A military member has to accept a kiss in this situation? What do you mean you can't force them to stop? If someone is trying to kiss you and you do not want them to kiss you, I'm pretty sure you can force them to stop.
No.
No?
No.
So not
no,
hashtag
it's
me,
no.
not
nope.
me too, hashtag.
Nope, it's the California parade rule of 1994.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Women could do it, but men, they have to accept the kiss.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Julianne had a question for her high school history class. Are all protests equal? If a student can decide to walk out of school for 17 minutes in support of gun control or against the Second Amendment, can they do the same to protest another right that is supposedly protected under the Constitution? Can they? The answer in California is nope. Julianne wanted her students to think about the double standard. Her message resonated with Nick Wade. He's a student there. He said, "I felt like if we were to go to school and say something like I wanted to walk out, maybe for abortion rights, then you would you'd know they probably wouldn't let us there because it's more of a conservative push. But if somebody wants to say let's walk out for gun control, the school's going to do it and go with it because it's a popular view with them." She was proud of her students that were thoughtful and, were open to questioning with boldness, honest questioning. The administration didn't like it at all. After class, Julianne received a call that she had been placed on administrative leave. Officials claimed that they had received several complaints from parents and students involving the teacher's communications regarding the conversation about the walkout. For Julianne, the Second Amendment conversation has turned a plea. It turned into a plea for the First Amendment. You know, we are really in trouble with our schools. If you are in a conservative school and you are only teaching design, intelligent design or creationism, and you are not teaching the Big Bang, you are doing a disservice to your students. If you are in a school in California and you are only teaching the Big Bang and you are not teaching intelligent design, then you are doing a disservice. We must be able to challenge thought. It is what the First Amendment was meant for. She's steadfast in her belief. You're going to allow students to walk out and get out of class without penalty, then you have to allow another group of students that want to protest. There are great teachers out there, and Julianne is one of them. She is the reason that kids should stay in school during school hours, because in a class like hers, they won't be taught what to think. They just may end up learning how to think.
It's Friday, March 16th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Mr. Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. How are you, sir?
I'm the same, Beck, which is tragic for everyone.
Oh, you are funny. Bill, your thoughts on that last story?
All right. I was a former high school teacher, as you know, and I taught an elective called Contemporary Problems, which dealt with the issues of the day in the early 1970s. So I'm pretty well versed about kids and what they do and how they do it and how they get swept up in all kinds of mania and peer pressure. So my solution to all of this is, look, if you want to have a demonstration or a protest against something, you should be able to if you're a student, but it has to be done after school, not during school hours. You can't impose on the school day and force people to make a decision about whether they should protest or not, because it's just wrong to put kids in that position. So you can do it after school, and you petition it. You go to the principal and you say, look, we'd like to have this kind of a discussion in the gymnasium or wherever, and, you know, hopefully a reasonable administration will respect that. So that's how you do it. You don't get involved with this trendy and spur-of-the-moment stuff.
Well,
but the most important story, and I don't know whether you covered this or not, because I am trying to keep up with you, but you've got so many things going on.
I know.
On the program. You might have, but we uncovered on BillO'Reilly.com, which is rapidly turning into an investigative agency.
Good for you.
That there was a far-left group behind this protest of these kids. Do you know that?
Yeah, well, we do, but yes. Okay. Most people don't.
The group is called Empower. E-M-P-O-W-E-R.
Okay, didn't know this part of it. Good. All right, go ahead.
Oh, you didn't know this?
No, this is new. This is new to me. Go ahead.
Back.
It's good. Go ahead.
This group was behind the student walkout. And not only were they behind it, but in certain areas they made signs. They made sure that far-left faculty members were posting stuff on social media. It was organized by Empower. Who's Empower, Beck? Empower is an offshoot of a group called the Women's March Movement.
Yeah, that there we had. I didn't have the loop of Empower. This is truly amazing, Bill. That
it is.
No
and
one
it was
is
not
covering
reported
this
by any
anyone
national news service.
Bill, do you remember?
None.
Do you remember how this is AstroTurf? This Tea Party, it's AstroTurf. These were people in their kitchens, you know, making little signs with sprinkles on them with their kids, and we were called AstroTurf, and it was. Everybody knew what AstroTurf meant because they covered it so much at the beginning of the Tea Party. Not a word about this.
And in Santa Barbara, a hotbed of women's movement, women's march movement, they actually had professionally printed signs. The kids were carrying, decrying white supremacy. So your listeners and every American citizen, you got to know that this stealth, sneaky propaganda has now reached a national crisis where American children are being manipulated. They have no idea who, what Empower is or what the Women's March movement is. They have no clue. They think it's a spontaneous uprising, and it is not. And these people are making tremendous gains. They have a tremendous amount of money, much of it from the George Soros crew, and they have the media in their pocket. And I will just point out that the Women's March movement, as we discussed last Friday, all right, is now favorable toward Louis Farrakhan, the biggest anti-Semite and anti-white person going around speaking today. So this is bad. And I'm proud that my website, BillO'Reilly.com, with a small staff, are breaking these stories and letting people know what the truth is about their country, because you're certainly not getting it from the national press.
Bill, if there was a, well, they barely covered the Right for Life march, which was enormous in Washington,
D.C. Yeah, they ignore it every year.
Yeah, they ignore it every single year. So they don't, they, those women don't count. Those people don't count. Those children don't count. And if there was a Right to Life march that was spontaneously happening, all across the country, and there was a walkout, and the signs, the buses, you know, to get the kids where they needed to go and organize everything and get the permits and get the stage and get the speakers and have all of that done. And then the signs as well were printed by churches. They would have exposed that and said this is nothing but a religious, crazy, crackpot, church-driven thing that is indoctrinating kids. Any doubt in your mind?
No. And everybody knows it, though. I mean, so what we're trying to do here is this story about the anti-Trump movement and the anti-conservative movement, which are two different things, is developing quickly. And what Americans are unaware of is that there is a powerful force behind all this. And you said it, that the nation's public schools are really in crisis because the teachers' unions are as far left as you can get, all right? And the administrators, the principals, school boards, are frightened to death of the women's movement. They're petrified of it. So where they couldn't win in the ballot box, they couldn't get Hillary Clinton elected and their liberal people in the House and the Senate, they couldn't get them elected. They're now doing it through propaganda and intimidation, which every totalitarian regime in history has used. And then they're hoping that that wave of intimidation leads to success at the ballot box. And so it's a much bigger story than just kids walking out waving signs saying we don't want any more kids shot. It's a much, much bigger story than that.
Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com. A conversation continues here in just a second. I want to tell you a little bit about Simply Safe, great home security company filled with really good people. I mean, these guys are, they're Imagineers, if you will. They imagine things that aren't and say, well, why can't we build it that way? Why can't we do it this way? Why do we have to lock people into a contract? Why do we have to wire a house? I don't want somebody walking around in my house drilling holes and setting up everything and you know, in some cases, casing the house themselves. I don't want that. I want to be able to have my home security system. I want to be able to buy it. I'd love to be able to install it, but I don't want to drill it. I mean, if it takes me more than a half hour, I don't want to do it. Well, that's what Simply Safe is. You don't even have to have a screwdriver. Simply Safe, you install, you own it. You are paying an unbelievable price. Just go to the website at simplysafebeck.com. You look and you'll see, just scroll down a little bit and you'll see how much money you're going to save by installing Simply Safe. And then there's no contract. It's $14.95 a month. You want the service 1 month, you don't want it the next month, it's up to you. No contract. And you'll never find a price like this anywhere. Try the new SimpliSafe, all redesigned, brand new. It's unbelievable. Check it out for yourself. SimpliSafeBeck.com. That's SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
We have Dennis Quaid joining us in about an hour from now. There's a new movie out called I Can Only Imagine. And Bart Millard, it's a true story about Bart Millard and the song that he wrote about his dad, I Can Only Imagine. That is this incredible story. I will tell you, I watched the movie last week and I was like, okay, well, let's watch this movie and see if it's any good. It is really good. You'll love it. And I think that Dennis Quaid, it may be his best performance yet. And it's an incredible story. We'll talk about that next hour. Right now we have Bill O'Reilly from BillO'Reilly.com on with us. Bill, let's talk about, you have any thoughts on the bridge collapse?
No, I'm sure they'll find out if the construction company did something.
Okay, so let me ask you this question. Do you have any comments, seeing that the bridge was 5 days old, do you have any comments of about the media talking about how this is Donald Trump and not investing in our infrastructure?
I did something. By the way, Dennis Quaid's a good guy. Tell him I said hello.
I'll say to you that I will.
He's really a good guy and a smart guy. Yeah. I did a commentary yesterday called Trump Fatigue. And I base it on my analysis of the cable news ratings. Two of the networks, Fox and CNN, are going down rapidly, losing audience rapidly. MSNBC in prime time is gaining a little bit, but that gain is going to evaporate soon. And the reason is, on both sides, the hate Trumpers and the love Trumpers, they're getting tired of this every single day. The most absurd comparisons, as you just said, you know, the infrastructure, and it's somehow Trump is tied in. These women who come out, they obviously want to make money. They're in it for money. Everybody knows they want money. So do their attorneys. Yet the media puts them up as some kind of victims. And even the dimmest of us, Beck, know that it is over. It's Trump fatigue. They want him out. We've heard it all now. Whatever Mueller comes back with, half the country's not going to believe it. All right? And why would Mueller subpoena Trump records for his private business more than a year after he started the Russian investigation? Why wasn't that done in the first 3 months? You know, I mean, it's just enough already. So I'm not surprised they're trying to tie him into the bridge in Miami, or somebody got a hurt toe in Wisconsin. It's got to be Trump's fault.
Will you do me a favor, Bill, because you are really, truly, I think, one of the sharpest minds about television. I used to marvel at, you know, you'd get in the morning and the first thing you would do is you would go over everybody's ratings and you track them, and you were looking for what's working and what's not. Right. You know, to try to kind of understand the mind of America. And I don't do that. America tries to understand the mind of Glenn Beck, which is weird. But I would love to hear your opinion on or your facts on what is really happening with cable news, because you're not hearing this anywhere. And I believe the collapse is coming.
Well, it's here. It's not coming. It's here.
So tell me
what's happening back. And it's an excellent question. Is this, after you left, I left, a few other people left the field. All right. And Donald Trump was elected president. The cable news divided into we hate Trump, we love Trump. And they wiped out all their other coverage of the country and the world. Everything, particularly in prime time, was geared toward either trying to get Trump out of office, the media coup that I've described, get him out, not criticize him, we want him out, or defend him at all costs. Mm-hmm. All right. So the cable news, instead of covering, I did six segments when I was doing The Factor. And maybe two of them were on politics and four of them were on other things. I'll give you an example. The guy who killed Kate Steinle is now suing the federal government, Beck. Did anybody cover that last night?
No.
Nobody.
Nobody.
As outrageous as it gets. Okay. So people can watch a little bit of the Trump stuff, but particularly for the we didn't know whether he was going to do anything or he's a new president. But now he's been in there for 14 months. All right, and it's the same stuff that it was 14 months ago.
So tell me what the ratings are doing, Bill. Compare when you were there to
in February 2017 when I was sitting there in The Factor. All right, we had more than 4 million viewers at 8 o'clock Eastern Time. Tucker Carlson in February 2018 this year lost about 1.2 million. Of that audience, or 1,200,000 people who are watching Fox News at 8 o'clock are no longer watching it at 8. Not Tucker's fault, all right? It's not that he's doing a bad show. It's just that it's
because this is
all about one thing.
And is this network-wide, and it is showing the same kind of downward trend for CNN?
Yes, CNN has lost a lot of viewers. At Fox, it is network-wide, with the exception of Sean Hannity. Now, Sean's show is the strongest show on the network, and Sean is the most enthusiastic advocate of Donald Trump, and at least provides, and this is why his show is still doing well, he provides the only balance in a passionate way. I mean, Laura does it too, Laura Ingraham, but Trump is really getting defended by one man on cable, and it's Sean Hannity. So those people who like Trump are watching Sean. And, you know, it's necessary. Sean Hannity's show is necessary. If you didn't have it, it would be 100% avalanche, bury a president of the United States. But, again, if you do it every night, if it's every night
and every show, so
and people are just saying, look, I'm going to go on the internet. I'm going to watch BillO'Reilly.com. I'm listening to Glenn Beck.
Okay,
I just can't invest the time anymore.
So hang on, just
that's
a second.
What's happening.
Go to CNN because I just want to see, because I believe this is happening on both sides of the aisle. Tell me about the numbers. How much have they lost at CNN? Do you know?
CNN. I don't have the sheet in front of me. We did it yesterday on BillO'Reilly.com. They've lost about 20-25% of their audience across the board. They have no traction at all. I mean, it's funny because they're giving Chris Cuomo, a primetime show.
I know.
His morning show didn't do anything.
I know. Quick, let's move him to primetime. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Is the Glenn Beck Program.
I talked to Larry Kudlow about how hard is it to fix the economy. Here's what he said.
I said this before, and I'll say it again. You and I and like-minded people who believe in freedom and I can sit down with you and fix the economy. Give me a half hour. Okay, I'll list the stuff. I mean, I've been doing it for close to 40 years. It's not, the principles don't change.
He now has his 30 minutes to fix the economy. What are your thoughts on Larry Kudlow?
Before I get to that, Beck, I just want to tell you, you know, every time I hear the music coming in from the break to introduce you,
yeah,
I want to go to the spa.
I'm going to put hot rocks on your back soon.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like I fire up the incense.
I know. All right, go ahead.
Okay.
Larry Kudlow,
good guy, smart guy, free marketeer. Don't think he's a big tariff guy.
No.
Which is interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Because I've said from the jump, this whole tariff thing is smoke and mirrors.
Well, he said it was quite interesting. He said he was called on the tennis court by Donald Trump, and he thought he was going to get chewed out for what he was saying on CNBC about tariffs. And he said, Trump said, let me explain my strategy. That's an interesting word. He said, within 20 minutes, I was on board. Now, he's not going to...
Yeah, because the strategy is to saber rattle and then to make deals and then not have the tariffs.
That's great if that's true. That's great. And I think he's... what do you think about the people who are saying, well, he's a former alcoholic and drug user? He was drinking and drugging.
Anybody who would say that has to examine their own life.
Thank you.
Everybody has frailties, and everybody does things that they're not proud of, and it seems to me that Mr. Kudlow overcame that. So why would anybody be using that to attack him? You know, when people do that, I just say, you're a bad human being. Please vanish from my presence.
Let's go to Gina Haspel. The story that was going around was that she was instrumental in the waterboarding of Abu, what's his name? I think he was the hairy back guy.
Now ProPublica has...
retracted that.
Admitted that their reporting was fallacious. Word of the day, fallacious. Everyone. Anybody surprised that ProPublica, which is the late Fidel Castro's favorite news operation, would put out this crap? I'm not. I don't know what the woman did or did not do. I think that's for the Senate confirmation hearings. I think everybody should have an open mind about it. We want a good CIA director.
Hang on just a second.
Yeah.
She was wildly smeared, and I don't think she gets her reputation back. They even said that they had a book that talked about who was running the camp at the time and that it was a he. But ProPublica for people who are really concerned about pronouns, got this one wrong. They said, we just assumed that the author was trying to hide the fact that it was Gina Haspel that was running the camp.
All right. But let's be honest. If you, and people don't know this, but number one, nobody even heard of ProPublica and this story. It's not a big story. But if you do follow it and you see the name ProPublica, you know immediately that this is coming from a far left position.
It's not about ProPublica. I mean, Rand Paul has used this.
Yeah, but Rand Paul, you knew, was going to pull this. Rand Paul, again, this is for the people of Kentucky to decide. Rand Paul has a very, very sharp view of life, and he's not going to go along party lines. He's just not. And so,
neither.
Going to derail a lot of stuff.
Neither am I when it comes to torture. I don't believe in torture. Waterboarding, we do to our own troops in training.
So a million times during the Iraq War. And Americans either support waterboarding or they don't. And, you know, that's what we have to go. That's why we vote. And most people, I believe, do on very, very limited occasions when life or death is in play. So anyway, I think this woman will probably be confirmed to be the director of the CIA. I think it's a good thing we have a woman in that position. I don't know her. I don't know much about, you know, her background, but that's why I'm looking forward to the hearings.
Bill, I've been listening intently to your commentary today, and as usual.
Well, you should, Stu.
It's been amazingly insightful, as usual.
What is he kissing up for?
But I want to make sure I draw attention to one particular thing from the interview, which it was a qualifier that Glenn pointed out. He said you were one of the brightest minds on television matters. Did you notice the qualification there? He said you were a very bright mind, but he said it was only really specifically on one minor topic.
Why are you trying to get into his good graces?
I just want to know how he would react to that, because it happened on national radio.
Ben expanded it. He expanded
Not
it
really.
By saying O'Reilly looked at the ratings because he wanted to know what the American people found edifying. And it's absolutely true. That's what I did. Hmm. And I'm not, look. Whether I'm a great mind or not is up to the listeners of your program tonight. What I try to do is bring a honesty and incisiveness into the dialogue. Because like Beck, and probably you too, Stu, I don't have an agenda here. I really don't. I just want the best for all Americans. And I see tremendous corruption in our country. tremendous corruption.
Yes. Let me ask you this, Bill. Yesterday, I did a story on how, you know, if you just Google, what was it, people leaving the Trump administration or being fired, and you'll get all kinds of lists from everybody, from every newspaper, but nothing on the first page of the results will tell you who he's replacing them with. And that's really kind of an important, because I think everybody that he's replaced so far has been an upgrade. And I've never seen anything like this thirst for blood. I mean, poor McMaster, man. They've been saying for a year, this is the weekend he's going to be fired. It's incredible.
Well, look, there's two things in play here. Pompeo, for Secretary of State, is an upgrade over Rex Tillerson. All right, there's no doubt in my mind. Rex was kind of frightening. Looked a little like Bela Lugosi.
Okay. All right.
You know, why? He couldn't have any meetings during the day. Had to be
That's
at night.
Not true.
I was wearing this black cape.
No, he wasn't.
But Pompeo's an upgrade. But Trump's management style has not changed since he was running around New York building condos. You do it his way or you're out. And anybody working for Trump has got to understand that. Now, Mattis, who I think is the best administrator in the Trump hierarchy, has managed to stay away and managed to do an excellent job as Secretary of Defense.
Yeah.
But the other guys, I mean, it's Trump's way or the highway, and that's just the way the man is.
Last question. Russia. What is going to happen with Russia because of the UK?
It's hard to predict Putin. Putin's in trouble now. All right? He's in trouble because his image is shattering around the world. It doesn't matter in Russia itself, because that's a totalitarian state. If you run against Vlad, he's going to put you in jail or poison you. All right? So that are your options. But around the world, everybody knows that Putin is Stalin light. I mean, that's who he is. And you remember when I interviewed Donald Trump in the Super Bowl for 2017, that weekend, I said to the president, why are you being soft on Putin? He's a killer. Do you remember that, Beck?
Mm-hmm.
And then Putin demanded that I apologize. Or he was going to send poison to Long Island or something.
Right.
Okay. Now, I saw that, and Trump really didn't have a, you know, his answer was, well, we do bad things too, which I thought was pretty weak.
Very weak.
But I think the good thing about this, if there isn't any, because people are dead, is that the world, there's no longer any debate about Vlad Putin, you know. He's just a savage.
Yeah.
He's a savage.
Okay.
And everybody's got to know it.
Bill, as always, thank you so much. Thanks for all the hard work at BillO'Reilly.com.
I want to thank Stu for the kind words. Very, very. My weekend, my St. Patrick's Day weekend, is now complete.
Right. You're welcome.
Very much.
Thanks a lot, Bill. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. See you soon.
BillO'Reilly.com. All right. Our sponsor this half hour, we want to thank Blinds.com for making this program possible. Blinds.com, the best at what they do. If you're looking to change the draperies or the window coverings, whether you need shade, shutters, drapes, whatever you need, Blinds.com has them. You can upgrade your home for less by doing the window treatments than anything else. The number one online retailer of custom window coverings is Blinds.com. And right now, through March 22nd, when you buy one, you get 50% off at Blinds.com/back. Can you check? Do we have the teacher from California?
That's what they're telling us.
We have her next. Okay, don't go anywhere. 50% off at Blinds.com/back. Blinds.com/back. Go there now. Rules and restrictions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
In Rockland, California, Jillian Benzel asked her students in class, she's a teacher, If a group of students nationwide or even locally decided, I want to walk out of a school for 17 minutes and go into the quad area and protest abortion, would that be allowed by our administration? For asking that question, she is now on administrative leave. They made sure she they expressed their displeasure with her question immediately, and she joins us now from Rockland, California. Julianne, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you, Glenn.
What do you teach? What subject?
Okay, so I teach advanced placement U.S. history. I teach a dual enrollment class, which is basically a college course on the high school campus in conjunction with it's a Sierra College, which is our local junior college.
Okay, so is
I do have my master's degree in history, so I'm teaching a college course on our campus.
So isn't this an appropriate question to ask, and not a political question, but a question about the First Amendment, the Second Amendment, and what, the Fourth Amendment?
Well, I'm going to also throw in the Sixth Amendment. I think there's something called due process of law. If I remember my stipulations of the Sixth Amendment, you're supposed to be proven, I think, innocent until proven guilty. And basically, when I got a call at 8:30 a.m. on the morning of the protest, when they had ample time 2 days prior, when I had been on campus to, you know, interview me, ask me questions.
What are they accusing you of doing?
At this point, because we had a meeting yesterday, basically, I just want to clarify, I was not told until yesterday afternoon. So 8:30 Wednesday morning, don't come in. You're on administrative leave. I kept calling. I need to know why, what's going on. And they released a statement to the local news as to why it was. And the statement apparently read that it said some students and parents were upset with the dialogue that I had in class. And again, Glenn, I know you are a statistics man. I love statistics. I have over 120 students, two students. So I think that's 1%, less than 1%, and one parent, which I'm going to presume is probably a parent of the student. They went down and apparently were uncomfortable or didn't like that I brought up abortion or that I was challenging the protest.
Oh, my gosh.
But two students was enough to get me on administrative leave. They didn't corroborate those students' stories with, say, another couple of
so
my own students.
Are you just being accused of making students uncomfortable by talking about the Constitution and constitutional rights?
I'm not sure what the wording. I'd have to look at the statement because they're kind of redacting most of this. They said in the meeting yesterday, this is not a disciplinary issue. We're just continuing to investigate. And I said, what on earth are you talking about? You can't investigate after you have basically criminalized me in front of my entire community. I've been teaching here for 20 years. I have an unscathed reputation. And you basically just put me at guilty. And then now you want to come back and ask me questions. Like
so Julianne, I only have a minute. I'd like to talk to you again after the weekend. But do you have support locally, and how can we help nationally?
Oh, that's very kind. I think just the fact that you are interested and you called would probably be enough. I mean, I'm receiving an incredible amount of support from the community, and honestly, the most endearing thing about this is students from my past, like who I've spoken and taught before. They and their parents are writing letters and sending me emails, so I'm a little overwhelmed with the support, to be honest with you.
Good.
I just appreciate your time.
Oh my gosh. Julianne, I said, awesome. We talked about this yesterday, and I said, this is a reason to stay in school, is because of teachers like you that are not trying to teach kids what to think, but how to think. How to think.
Absolutely.
Thank you
That's
so much for... thank
Absolutely.
You, especially in that den of viper. One more question.
Yes.
Is your union supporting you?
I must say that my union president was there with me, and she was fantastic. So, yes, they are.
Oh, well, that's unbelievable. Thank you. I'm glad to hear that.
Yes.
Julianne,
yes.
God bless, and we will continue to follow your story. Thank you. You bet.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Boy, you imagine being a teacher in California.
Oh, my gosh.
How alone and how crazy. But I think that's good news, what she said about the support, and it was only two students. You know, I think that's
just
good
the reaction is ridiculous. I mean, you set up those circumstances, and it's a completely ridiculous set of reactions.
Okay.
She should not be just thrown out.
Coming up in just a minute, Bart Millard has written a beautiful story, a true story, and a great movie is coming out, opens today. I can only imagine getting rave reviews. I'm one of them. It's a great movie. And Dennis Quaid is the star. He's joining us next hour as well. Don't miss it.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
I am always a little bit edgy about faith films because they can get so preachy and so just, oh dear God. And on top of that, I am always concerned when a friend says, hey, I've just made a new movie, and they give it to you. Watch it and tell me what you think. And you're like, oh dear God, okay, I'll watch the movie. Because you just never know. A friend of mine gave me a movie he's just finished called I Can Only Imagine. And I watched it with my children, and it is a fantastic movie. And if you listen to me, you know that I say nothing, especially when I have a friend. I say nothing about a movie or a project, and I never will rave about something that I don't believe in. I think this is absolutely fantastic. My son, who is like pulling teeth to watch anything other than a Marvel movie, watched it, was engaged the whole time, and loved it as well. It is a great movie. It is the true story of Bart Millard, and the song that, if you don't know, is a gigantic Christian crossover song that has a really interesting story called I Can Only Imagine. And it's the movie stars Dennis Quaid, who plays Bart's father. Dennis is going to be joining us here in about a half an hour, but I wanted to get Bart in here to tell us the real story. Also, John Irwin is here, who's my friend, who's a movie maker. And John, first of all, if I may give you some details.
Yes.
You want to talk about the little engine that could. Okay. So far, they expected the movie box office expected this movie. It opens today. It was in previews last night, right?
Yeah, previews last night, yeah.
They were expecting this movie to make $2 million for the whole weekend. Last night alone in previews, it made $1.3 million. It is one of the largest preview numbers for a faith film, I think only beaten by The Passion. So far this morning, the ticket sales are now up to 2.3 million. So that's passing what they expected for the entire weekend. It's currently the number one ticket online this morning at movietickets.com and Fandango. And this is going to be the breakout faith film that shocks the box office. Now, you're in a third of the movie theaters that Panther.
Yeah,
is
we're
in.
We're all in a state of shock at this point. It's incredible, and you know, sometimes when something's meaningful and inspirational to you, you just have to trust that it will be to other people. And this song made a huge impact in my life at a time of loss. It was kind of like a beacon of hope, you know, and I just. We all just felt like there were more of us out there.
Can you real quick before I, because I want to talk to Bart because he has such a great story. Can you tell me the test results? I mean, didn't it just test?
It tested higher than pretty much any faith film has ever. It tested at 96 total positive, which and a 91 definite recommend. That's, but it's 40 points above average in every category. And, you know, I just think it's a song beloved by millions of people. And I think once they know the story behind the song, it's going to make it even more meaningful.
And I think it's one of Dennis Quaid's best roles he's ever
played.
Incredible. Incredible.
One of the most humble, authentic, it was totally unique in his body of work.
Yeah, it is.
And he deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah. Okay, so Bart is here. Hello, yeah. Bart. How are you?
Hello. I'm great.
Good. I bet you are. So tell me, because the story revolves around you and your relationship with two fathers in heaven and your dad that you grew up with.
Right.
He was truly a monster. Mm-hmm. Really a monster.
Yeah, he was, my parents divorced when I was three, and my mom remarried when I was in third grade, and they moved from Greenville, Texas down to San Antonio, and decided that for whatever reason it was best. My whole family was in the Greenville area, and so for whatever reason decided that my brother and I would live with my dad, who wasn't, he had a bad temper, but was never really abusive towards like me or my brother until after my mom moved away, and it got really bad. He took it, for some reason, if he had a bad day, he took it out on me. I don't remember many weeks where I wasn't beaten three or four times a week. And this went on until, you know, probably my freshman year in high school when my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And literally kind of had this front row seat to see this man go from being a monster to somebody that like literally fell in love with Jesus and his life completely changed, and to the point to where he was like my best friend, the godliest man I ever knew by the time he passed away.
So your childhood, he not only beats you, but is, at least in the movie, he's also convincing you at the same time that you're completely worthless and you'll never accomplish any of your dreams. Is that true?
Yeah, he was a football star, like one of the only All-Americans ever to come out of Greenville, a small town, and he went to SMU, and I was named after Bart Starr, and like football was everything. And either hurt his knee or somehow ended up quitting college and getting married, and just always had this, you know, don't, your dreams are worthless, you need to get a real job, you know, it's gonna ruin you, and you know, because that was all he ever wanted to do, and it just didn't work out. And so, and you know, between that and I guess never remarrying, and then cancer set in, he's just an angry, angry person.
So in the movie, he listens to you on the radio in one of your songs, but that obviously is not working in the timeline of real life. So right. what was the pivot point of your dad's life in real life?
Well, in real life, my dad was diagnosed when I was a freshman in high school. He passed away when I was a freshman in college. And so the change was definitely over time in that 4 or 5 year period. When I was little, we went to church, and then just, you know, he just kind of got sick of it, and it was angry. And like when I was in seventh grade, started going to like the youth group, like it was just another excuse not to go home. So the church kind of raised me, and he was almost jealous of it and liked the church even less because of that. And somewhere along the way, just realized that I would sing in church from time to time, and we'd, you know, broadcast on the local AM radio station or whatever. Mm-hmm. And not long before he passed away, he would start telling me, you know, I've always listened, because I just didn't think he cared.
So that's true then.
Yeah, it's true.
Because that's a powerful, powerful point.
I wish I could say that in fact, there's amazing, one of my favorite scenes is when I go home to kind of confront my dad. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of this moment to where, you know, Trace Atkins plays Brickles, tell me, you know, you got to face your fears. And it looks like it's going to be, you almost know where the movie's going. It's going to be this, you know, angel singing, and it's going to be this amazing moment. We're going to live happily ever after. And when we get there, my dad's, this change is already taking place, but I'm the one that's angry. And
so I have to tell you, that's why, that's one of the reasons why this worked for me.
Yeah.
I grew up with in an abusive family myself. Mm. And there's no way, if you would have come home and said, oh, dad,
no
you've
question.
Changed, it would have been the typical Christian movie.
And it's funny because when we originally, when they tested the movie and screened it, some people were like, I don't understand. Why would Bart have been angry? He's going to fix everything. I was like, well, obviously you haven't gone through what I went through, because there was an arrogance about me that if my dad was going to be saved, I was going to be a savior. Like I deserve that almost. Like what he did to me, I'm going to be the one to change him. When I get there and he's already changed, I genuinely was upset. Like, wait, who's doing this? Like you don't, it was a weird, like you don't have a right to be good all of a sudden. And there's a part of me that didn't even want grace to be for him, because I was so hurt and so angry. And so it ends up being, me, I'm the one that it takes time to come around.
Yeah.
And the change is taking place. And it over time, it's like, okay. And it was me just trusting and being convinced that it was real.
Do you think if your dad hadn't have had that change, that, because at least in the movie, you were going down that road to some degree. Mm-hmm. It's normal.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
If your dad hadn't had that change, do you think you would have possibly followed in a similar path?
I hope not, but I don't know. Like, you know, it's, you know, I grew up in a little church that was, there's a little bit of legalism involved. And I remember always kind of being scared into, you know, divorced kids become divorced parents and this kind of, you know, and just, and almost believing that was my identity and that's who I was going to be, whether I liked it or not. So there's a chance I would have fallen into it, just not realizing that, oh, wait, I'm made for more than this.
It's really an amazing thing, because I grew up in a family. My mom committed suicide and alcoholism and everything else. And And for a long time in my life, I just thought I was destined to do that. Because that's the way it ends in my family.
Yeah, and if I had a nickel for everyone that says, well, that's just who we are.
Yes.
It's just who I am. And it's that's the biggest lie ever. And it's hard. And it's
hard to get past that.
It's genuinely hard to break the chains of
it
that.
It is.
It really is.
It's really hard. So the song, you write it about your dad. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that writing process.
Well, when he passed away at a gravesite, my grandmother said, I can only imagine what Bub's seeing right now. And I was 19 and I became obsessed with heaven. And it wasn't because I was a super spiritual kid or anything. It was almost like this kind of OCD thing. Like I became obsessed with him being in a better place versus looking at an empty bedroom. And so it's like, I'm telling myself, like everyone doesn't lose someone. They have to be in a better place because the only time I was angry at God wasn't when I was being abused. It was when I got the dad always wanted and he left. And so I kept telling myself,
I thought that was again in the movie, really.
Yeah.
Strong
yeah.
point.
Yeah.
Really, really.
Yeah.
Finally,
now
finally?
That I want. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's when I struggled the most. And so it was almost like this superstitious, like I would write the phrase, I can only imagine on anything I get my hands on. Like if I was on hold, I'm writing. My grandmother thought I was practicing my autograph, but I'd just be writing it over and over. It's carved into a desk I had in college, and it was just something I always went to. And it was just me telling myself, "He's in a better place. He's in a better place. It must be better than him being here because I really would like him here." And so years later, I'm in the band, and we're looking for one more song for an independent record. And I'm literally trying to find. This is before smartphones and typing stuff on a computer. I had these three journals that I would carry, and I was looking for a blank page to write one more song for our album, and literally every page had Imagine or I Can Only Imagine written on it somewhere. And so at first I was frustrated, like, I really need a blank page. Why'd I have to ruin every page? And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I get it. I totally get it. And so it's probably the only time in my life a song was written in about 10 minutes, but it had been in my heart for a few years, so it wasn't just out of the blue.
So I want to take it from that point to what happened after the song all the way to the movie, and then we'll pick it up with Dennis Quaid when we come back in a minute.
Movie is in theaters today. I Can Only Imagine. You can go to ICanOnlyImagine.com to get all the details.
It's a great movie. I can't wait to talk to Dennis Quaid. It really is the performance of his career. Hang on just a sec. What'd you say? You got to open it. You got to push it on. There you go. Real quick.
Yeah, it's changing his life. It's really amazing.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk to you about our sponsor this half hour. If you're hiring somebody, it's tough, but ZipRecruiter is there, and they have refigured the way we look for the right employees. There's a smarter way. They built a platform that finds the right job candidates for you. Now, the platform used to just, you put it in and then it would post on all of the job sites. But now what it does, it's smart technology. It learns what you're looking for, and it goes out and it identifies the people with the right experience and then invites them to apply for your job. And the invitations are really what has changed things. It's why 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in the first day. But they don't just do that. They also spotlight and highlight the strongest applications that are coming into you so you never miss a great match. If you're looking for the right employee for your business, ZipRecruiter is the way to find them, and you can use ZipRecruiter now for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. That's ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Try it for free now at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
This will be the first time we've ever done an interview with somebody at the North Pole. We'll explain that coming up in a second. Dennis Quaid joins us in a minute. We're talking to Bart Millard about a song that he wrote and now is a major motion picture. It opens in theaters everywhere across the country today, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. It is great. I Can Only Imagine. There are some good movies out to see this weekend, some really good movies to see. This is the one you should see this weekend and take your whole family. My kids and Tanya, all of us love this movie. I Can Only Imagine. So it's about you, Bart. Mm-hmm. You're not in it. Who plays you?
His name's J. Michael Finley.
He's amazing.
Yeah, he's unbelievable.
Who is he? His voice is like...
That was the big question of who's going to play Bart, because Bart has this power voice.
Yeah.
And Andy and I spent many years in the music business, so we're like, this kid's got to sing. You know, he's got to sing these songs. You can tell if it's overdubbed. So I was in New York working. We had looked at 1,000 people, and all over the country, turned up empty. And I went to see Les Mis on Broadway, and he was the understudy to Jean Valjean. But the
understudy,
here's the thing: an understudy,
great.
An understudy would typically take 4 or 5 performances over the course of a run, but the main guy could only play about 3 performances a week because that vocal's so hard. So he played Valjean 65 times
and closed out the show.
And closed out the show as Valjean. And so I'm watching him sing these iconic songs.
Oh, yeah.
Best voice I've ever heard.
Oh, he's great.
He looks like Bart.
Yeah.
He's a pastor's kid from Missouri, and he saw Mercy Me play 3 times in concert in high
school. You've got to be kidding
me. Cast him on the spot. It
Holy
was unbelievable.
Cow. Holy cow. Yeah. So that is your Bart. That's your band. Yeah. And you were looking for a song. You decided to, you finally realized, I can only imagine, might be the song I should write.
Right. Yeah.
What happened? Because it wasn't really something that you felt passionately about, but it wasn't something that you were like, we've got to song.
Right.
This is our song.
Yeah. We recorded on an independent record, and we didn't even play it live for about a year because it was special to me, but it was like the last song on the album. And we were just doing church camp, stuff like that. And we just never did. And some guy at camp said, hey man, can you play this Imagine song tonight? And I was like, we don't even know it. And so while he's doing his little sermon, we're behind the scenes, like learning our song, whispering it. And then we played it, and that first time ever, and the spotlights on our face, we couldn't see. And when we finished, there was nobody made any noise. And we were like, this is the worst decision of our career. And this is a horrible choice. And when the lights came up, there were people kind of at the altar and crying, and we'd never seen anything like that. And we were like, what is happening right now? And throughout that, we went from selling like 1,000 CDs on our own, our independent records. If we did that in a year, we thought, well, we can pay our phone bill. And then that independent record did about 140,000 units, which is like, it would be 1 million on a record label on our own, like out of the trunk of our car. And we're shipping to like 400 or 500 bookstores out of our garage. And somewhere along the way, you know, Amy Grant heard about it and called and said she wanted to record it. And we were like, well, I don't have any kids, but hopefully they'll go to college one day, because that just seemed like a good move. And we're like, yeah, knock yourself out. And
is that true? That part of the, I don't want to give anything away, but
yeah,
is that true?
It's interesting. The two reasons Andy and I said that we want to do this film. One is when Bart said, I watched God transform my dad from a monster into the man I wanted to become, and just that reconciliation. But then Andy was doing an interview for one of our other films in Atlanta, talking to a DJ, and in the break, the DJ said, hey, what are you guys thinking about doing next? And we said, well, thinking about, I Can Only Imagine, kind of kicking the tires of it. And the guy said, I was there. I was at the Ryman in Nashville when Amy Grant pulled Bart up on stage.
Wow.
And he sang the song instead of her. We compressed
and
3
she was planning on doing it.
Yeah, it was her song. And it's like, we ended up signing, and it was a B-side on our album, but it was going to be her single, so she would be known for the song. And so we were literally, in their words, we were the guys that wrote Amy's next El Shaddai. And so that's kind of how we ended up signing, because we were the writers of Amy's next hit. But Amy took like a couple of years to actually, she took forever to make the album. So we released ours, and her whole plan was sunk, because nobody knew what the next El Shaddai was, because she was taking forever. And so we were like panicked, and our label's like, what do we do? And so how it really happened was, about a week before, we called, and she was like, we're like, hey, any plans to release a song? And that's when she was like, you need to finish what you started. This is a career song for you. So she handed it back, and we were like, what? And she goes, but here's the problem. I've got to showcase this thing at the Ryman next week, and it's not my song anymore, so you have to sing it. And I really wish it would have been spontaneous, where I couldn't have sweated bullets for a week, because my first time in Nashville was on the Ryman with Amy and Vince singing, and she was like, hey, you don't know these guys? It's Mercy Me, and this is their next song. And so, yeah, it's on YouTube somewhere. You can find it.
Mm. Incredibly selfless act by her, and we just compressed those two moments into one.
So tell me, we're going to Dennis Quaid. He's in the North Pole?
The North Pole. He's shooting a show called Fortitude for Amazon. Uh-huh. And so basically he had a week off, promoted the film. He just went back. And we've been talking quite a bit, but literally in the North Pole shooting this show, talking to him a few nights ago, and he's like, yeah, there's polar bears. I'm looking at the northern lights. And I'm like, Dennis, go inside, please.
It's the northernmost city in the world. And he said, it's literally, the population of the town is 1,000 people with 3,000 polar bears.
Oh my God.
He's not
gosh.
Kidding. I was like, are y'all packing heat? And he goes, everybody's packing heat.
By the way, I thought we did pretty good calmly because we've got him. But all morning leading up to about a half hour ago, all the phone lines were, they would ring and you get this weird Scandinavian, like something's wrong with the phone line message. And so we've been fixing that. And it's fixed. Yeah. So Dennis Quaid is on the other line.
So we have our first guest from the North Pole. We also have our first guest that could be eaten by a polar bear during the interview. And what's amazing about Dennis is, first of all, this, I think, is his career performance. Do you think he feels that way?
I think he this performance is so unique in his body of work. Yeah, I mean, I can't speak for him, but he's
proud of it.
He's
man.
So
it's
proud
really
of it.
Yeah. Good.
He's so he loves the film. It's like we're a family. We really bonded, and he really connected to his faith roots. And in fact, wrote a song he recorded for T-Bone with T-Bone Burnett on the set of Imagine, and played it for Bart the first time. And it's amazing what's happening in his life.
And his story is almost the exact opposite of Bart's. And yet there is this weird connection.
Yeah.
We go to the bears in the wilderness next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm joined by Bart Millard and John Irwin, and now Dennis Quaid from the film I Can Only Imagine, which is a remarkable film. And Dennis Quaid plays Bart's dad. It's a true story, and his father was in a line. Describe your dad.
He was just the scariest man I knew. Just really abusive and no substance abuse, nothing like that. He was just an angry person.
How close was Dennis in the role? How close was he to your dad?
Frighteningly close. I remember when I went in, I got there when he started shooting his scenes, and I got in late, and the first scene I saw was when my dad was diagnosed with cancer. And without ever having a conversation with me, there were just parts of him that kind of creeped me out, like how close they were. And then after he was like, hey, your dad's not here, so you're my guy, like you've got to tell me how this is. And I don't know if it was he was that accurate or it was just something about it. It was, I knew we were onto something, because there were some painful moments that I was like, okay, I'm feeling what I haven't felt in years. And so we're on to something here.
We're waiting for Dennis Quaid to pick up the phone and get away from the polar bears. He is he is there now. He's at the North Pole of all places. Dennis, are you there? Hello, Dennis.
He was there.
Okay, he was there. Is he there? Sarah, tell me what's happening.
Okay. Did a polar bear eat Dennis Quaid?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's happened.
In a world of technology that is so incredible, you're kind of like, we can't get a line from the North Pole.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really? Why can we not talk to the North Pole? Right? What's interesting, if you've seen the show, it's Fortitude on Amazon. I get cold just watching it. I'm like, why are you doing this show? Why not do a Hawaiian show?
They have green screens.
Yeah. He's like, he was excited about it. He's like, we're going to the farther north, the northernmost city that you can possibly travel to as a human being. I'm like, and you're smiling right now, Dennis, why?
He calls the other day and he was like, it's 30 below and it was midnight his time. He's like, hold on, let me go outside and get better signal. And I was like, don't do that.
yeah. It's
what is the what's the animal that Luke has to open up? Or
the tauntaun.
If he's sleeping in a tauntaun, let me know.
It's an average of 20 below. But the film actually did an amazing thing. You know, he had written a song for his mom 25 years ago called On My Way to Heaven, never finished it, an old-fashioned gospel, because she's very devout. And he got to the set and just reconnected with his Baptist roots. He was baptized at 9 years old with his brother Randy on the same day, and kind of just it all stirred in him, finished the song, played it for Bart for the first time, And I guess Bart was probably a little nervous, like, what do you say to Dennis Quaid if it's bad?
I know. Yeah,
it was actually,
see what happens?
See what happens? You're like,
that's what I felt like with the movie.
What do you do? But then, so it was really good, and he got with his friend and producer, legend, T-Bone Burnett, recorded it.
Oh,
we
wow.
just did a music video to it, and we're going to launch that next week. And he gave it to his mom on his 91st, on her 91st birthday.
That's amazing.
Yeah. It's really, really good.
It's incredible, and I kind of, if we can get him on the phone. How are we doing, Sarah? Okay. Call Santa. See if he can help. what's amazing is he had kind of the opposite dad.
Yeah.
His dad, your dad was, you know, dreams are dead and get a real job. And Dennis, his dad, if I'm not mistaken, was wanted to be an actor and studied to be an actor and then was shipped off to war. Mm. Came back, never pursued it, and always regretted it, and said, do it,
mm-hmm.
do it, do it, do it.
Yeah, yeah, and they did. In fact, Andy, my brother was in New York, and there was a theater they played in. It was a play he and his brother kind of launched at. Gary Sinise, really great friend, was the director of it, and you know, so they started very early. Dennis Quaid's first movie was in 1976. He was an extra. Cloris Leachman was
Hang
the
on.
Star.
We have him. Yeah, Cloris Leachman was in this movie, too. Dennis, are you there?
Hey, Glenn.
Hey.
We have contact.
You have not been eaten by a polar bear.
No, I'm 12 degrees from the North Pole.
Oh, that's amazing. First of all, Dennis, I watched the movie, I think, earlier this week or late last week. And I think this is the performance of your career. You were fantastic in this. Really good.
Thank you. Thank you. It's such a great, inspiring story to begin with. And the way I choose my movies is that I read them, you know, and that's the only time I'm going to have a first time experience like an audience member. And I was just, it touched me in a place where I had no words. I just had to do it.
Your life, we were just talking about it, is in strange ways parallel. You were writing a song about your mom. This story is about a song about a dad. And Bart's dad was a monster, and your dad seems to be the exact opposite in encouraging you to follow your dreams.
Yeah, my dad was... my dad probably got knocked around a bit when he was a kid, you know, like kids in the 20s did. His dad wasn't there a lot, and he encouraged us. He turned both my brother and I onto acting, and was always doing comedy skits around the house, and you know, kind of rubbed off on us, I think. And Bert's dad, who I play in the film, you know, Bert himself called him a monster, and basically that's what he was, you know. People who abuse, they're usually were abused themselves. And I don't really know that story. You know, that can come from several places. But he was a pretty bitter man that, you know, really took it out on his son.
Were you concerned at all about, I mean, you know, when you look at faith films, there's a couple of things that could go through your mind, that it could be really, really cheesy. Or I could be, you know, marked as somebody who is, you know, in these faith films. Did any of that concern you at all when the Irwin brothers contacted you?
Well, first off, any movie, whether it's a faith film or, you know, a stupid, dumb comedy, can be cheesy. That doesn't have to be a faith film.
Yeah.
And you can get marked by making a bad movie. Or if you make too many of them, let's put it that way. I don't care about faith films. To me, they are films for the underserved.
I'm sorry, they're films for... Audience.
The underserved.
Okay, yeah.
There's an audience in this country that has always been there that don't want movies, inspirational films, or films that make them think. Films that they relate to, and that there hasn't been, they haven't been serving that market. And I think that's the reason there's such a groundswell for it.
We're talking to Dennis Quaid. You're up in the North Pole. You're shooting for Fortitude?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a series that I'm doing for Amazon in the States. It originated in England, the Sky Atlantic.
Yeah.
It's about a strange little town up north. It's the northernmost town in the world, actually.
Yeah, and you know they can recreate that without having to go to the North Pole, right?
We tried for two seasons in Iceland to recreate it. Couldn't quite get there.
So, just real quick, there are 3-to-1 man to human or man to polar bear relationship.
That's what they said. They said it was 3,000 polar bears and 1,000 human beings. Mm-mm. And but I think the human beings have caught up. really, there's 150 Thai people here. Several people from the Philippines, from Eastern Europe. People come here to get a job. It reminds me of maybe when the railroads were being built in the United States in the 1870s.
Yeah, but wasn't there some place
about a visa? It's an interesting place.
Wasn't there some place to go when they built those railroads in America?
Hey, there's a big ocean out there.
Dennis, tell me about the song that you finished writing about your mom that you were inspired to finish because of this movie.
I grew up in music all my life, and I really loved the old gospel songs. I wrote this song called On My Way to Heaven with that in mind about 25 years ago. I wrote it for my mom, and I even played it for her at the time, but it never was quite finished. I never recorded it, and I never played it in public. Something was missing, let's put it that way. And along comes, I can only imagine, the movie and what it was about. You know, it was about a guy who, it's about his father. And, people picked it up as the biggest faith song or Christian song ever recorded, you know, about his dad. And I don't know, it kind of inspired me. While I was on the set, all of a sudden The Bridge came to me, which is, you know, the last thing missing from the song, which was The Bridge, and which actually makes the song. And I played it for Bart, and who thought I should record it. And we didn't quite make getting it in the film itself, but T-Bone Burnett produced it for me.
Unbelievable.
Who's been a good friend of mine for a while.
Yeah.
It was like a lot of things came together, making this film in a very very incredible way. And so I finished it about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, and they made a music video of it. And we recorded it we played it at Ryman Auditorium the other night with along with Bart. We opened it for Bart and his band. Mercy Me.
Huh.
And now it's going to be out there.
Well, it's fantastic, and I really I wanted to ask you to come on the program and not only promote the film because I thought it was really good, but just to really honestly tell you, I love your movies, and quite honestly, we had a discussion earlier today. We're a little pissed that there wasn't Interspace 2, but your performance is really good, Oscar worthy, really good. So congratulations.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But I've already, you know, really, I mean, really good meeting. I've really already gotten my reward. The only reward I ever get with acting or any kind of endeavor is while I'm doing it, and work with those people and be on that set. And, I really learned a lot about myself. And I got to witness, you know, the faith of the people that I was working with who were making this film. And Bart's father, in a way, he turned his life completely around. And, through grace, and he got cancer, and you could call it a death row conversion, but it happened and it was real. And he and Bart had the most beautiful relationship you could possibly have at the end of his life. And the gift he gave Bart is that Bart did not have to carry that around for the rest of his life.
It's a great gift.
And then Bart wrote this beautiful song that affected so many people and strengthened their faith as well.
Dennis Quaid from the North Pole. Next time we speak, I'm expecting you to be on Mount Everest.
I'd like to be there in person with you, man.
I would love it. You're welcome anytime. Dennis Quaid, thank you so much, sir.
Appreciate you.
You bet. The name of the movie is I Can Only Imagine, and it is open right now. It is already, if I can just get the stats that they just released, it's the number one ticket movie ticket online already this morning on movietickets.com and Fandango. It is already, they were expecting it to make $2 million on its opening weekend. As of 6 o'clock this morning, it already had made $2.3 million. That's more than the total estimate for the entire weekend. And it is receiving rave reviews, including mine. I Can Only Imagine, the story of Bart Millard. John, congratulations.
Yeah, what a great weekend. We're all in a state of shock and appreciate the friendship, man.
You bet. Thank you. Bart, good job.
thank you
so much. God bless. All right, if you want your home sold on time and for the most amount of money with all sorts of excuses, you need realestateagentsitrust.com. You need somebody who's going to get the job done, somebody that is somebody that has the right marketing plan. You know, the one thing that I've learned about real estate is your real estate agent has to have a good marketing plan. They have to be able to market and constantly having people coming through, at least on their website or coming through the houses, because the more people that are seeing their houses and seeing this, the faster you end up selling your house. Over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. Their bond is their word. They have principles. They're fans of the show. They share your same sensibilities. Our agents fully vet them, and we choose them for their knowledge, their skill, and their track record. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test, and the results are remarkable. They are selling houses faster and for the most amount of money, which is what you want. Realestateagentsitrust.com. Whether you're buying or selling your house, realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck Mercury. Glenn Beck.
You know, since we're here in the Hollywood thing here, Matt Damon has announced that he is moving to Australia because of Donald Trump.
Yeah, you give him a little credit for this?
I do.
If he actually goes through with it, he's the first celebrity who's promised this.
First one. None of them have delivered. No. He's the first one. Congratulations to Matt Damon. You're nuts, but congratulations for moving over there.
And just a message to Australia, you can keep him. So you were aware.
Have a safe weekend. God bless.
Glenn Beck Mercury.